Welcome to Notcast, episode 262, Tumble Beasts.
They're going to get you.
They come for us all eventually. I'm Saverin.
I'm Fuzzwolf.
And we're Shitlords.
Yes, we are. Or Poop Dukes.
Poop Dukes.
Yes.
Feces Führers.
No, don't want to use the word Führer in there.
Trying to think of other rhymes, but I'm failing at the moment.
Lardass Lords.
Yes. So it's been 2 weeks since we last recorded this show, and a lot of stuff has happened in the world. And, you know, lots of shit online, and some furfag got married, too.
Oh, that old thing, yes.
Yeah.
That old thing being me, in this case.
So, yeah, let's just talk about your wedding first.
So, briefly, before we talk about anything else, I don't know how much he would appreciate this or not, but I want to dedicate this episode of Notcast to Jim Hardiman, a.k.a. Skunkworks, who passed away last Friday, and everybody just found out about it today.
Oh, yeah. We were going to bring that up, but you kind of beat me to the punch.
Okay, it was something I was thinking about.
That dude was only 42.
Yep.
Fuck.
He'd had a, and he'd posted about this in his journal. He's Skunkworks on FA. Mm-hmm. If you want to drop by and, you know, leave a condolence shout or anything like that. But he talked on his journal about basically he's had lifelong health issues, mostly complications of diabetes. He'd had a pancreas and kidney transplant a number of years ago. And while the transplants seemed to go well, it looked like there was some sort of defect in the kidney that he received that was like maybe a bacteria or something that was hiding in there. So the kidney he received started to fail. And he had other health issues that prevented him from getting dialysis right away. So they were like, we're going to look into doing dialysis in October. And it's kind of sad that his last journal in July was talking about, I'm putting all my affairs in order. I'm making sure my will is up to date so that my family doesn't have to deal with any shit. And I'll be lucky to see 2015. And he kind of knew, you know.
I mean, that's a lot better than just croaking, you know. He was like,
yeah,
he saw the writing on the fucking wall and at least got his shit in order, and that's, you know, good on him.
But
it doesn't make it really any easier on his family emotionally, but at least when it comes to the non-emotional matter-of-fact stuff that you have to deal with after somebody dies, that's a little less work on their part.
Yeah, and I read some of the things his friends were saying in their journals, and one of them was saying how he had this life of pain and illness, but he was like constantly upbeat and everything and a real joy to be around. I was not around him
I never IRL. Met the guy, but
you know, I obviously saw his work. So it's kind
of to his art, you know.
It's kind of interesting that you know, he was still an upbeat guy given all of the challenges that he faced in his life.
Still 42. Shit.
42. 4 years older than me. And apart from those health issues, as far as like fitness and everything goes, he was in a lot better shape than me. So, totally makes you think.
Yeah.
And, you know, piss yourself with fear a little bit.
Make yourself a will, kids.
Yeah. Especially, you know, now that I've, you know, got a home and a business.
And a husband.
Yeah.
Not that it was really anything different. I mean, you have a ring and a title.
Well, yeah. And like in Texas, inheritance law wouldn't necessarily flow that way automatically. So it is a good idea to make a will. I really don't know, you know, what would happen with that. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, that is really sad. I remember seeing his stuff back in the day. I remember seeing his stuff in Genus.
Yeah, I mean, he's been doing furry art for probably more than half his life.
Yeah, his bio on FA says that he got active in the furry community in 95.
Oh, wow.
So that is But nearly 20 years? No, nearly 20
That's
years.
Right, 20 years.
Nearly 20 years ago, yeah.
Longer than me.
Yeah, longer than me, too. I got in 98, a couple years
like
later.
96 or so.
Yeah.
I was 13, so that'd be 96.
Wow, you little perv.
Hey, I tell you, I was looking for stuff about the Disney Robin Hood, see if there was like anything about that on the net.
Mm-hmm.
And I found the Orlando Furry Archive and Chris Sawyer's stuff, his early stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it was two unicorns fucking, and I thought that was really fucking hot. And then I thought they were, then I found out they were two dudes. I still thought it was pretty fucking hot.
Mm-hmm.
And so Chris Sawyer turned me gay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how it works.
It is all his fault. We will totally blame him.
But yeah, that really does suck. And
it does.
You know, we do have other artists in the community who are a good deal older, too, and have been doing stuff for a long time. And now it's like our furry elders, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to happen. You know, Vicky Wyman was posting not long ago about she was having to move and stuff. And
she's had some rough shit.
She is like... like she's 61, bad back, and in not great financial situation, and you know it kind of blows to see some of our furry elders getting, you know, kind of starting to get a little older there, and I guess it's just something that everybody has to deal with eventually, but yeah. So on to a happier topic, Savern wanted to talk about. Our big event, my big event with Tyrion was my wedding.
Our big event.
Yeah. It was not a fox and wolf event. It was a wolf and wolf event. So that was just last weekend. Friday, we had bachelor parties. So Tyrion had his at our friend Buck's house. There was lots of alcohol. And lots of partying, so there's a bunch of people there. Buck had gotten this little traditional pair of antlers when he was teaching in Japan. And it's a town that is a small town in Japan somewhere where they just let the deer kind of go wherever they want because they're sacred for some reason, like they bring the light or they bring the season or... I don't remember it, but basically they sell the shit out of these little pairs of antlers there. They're like the tourist trap
cool stuff.
It's a traditional thing. Everybody has them. So he had Tyrion wear the pair that he had brought back with him all those years ago for his stag party. Yeah, so Tyrion wore his little pair of antlers all night, and a picture of him made it onto Twitter.
Yeah.
On the other side, my best man, Guardian, set up a dinner and hookah at the hookah bar that I normally go to, which is a Jasmine's hookah bar. So,
Richardson, Texas.
Yep. So it's Lebanese food and then hookah. So I've only ever really eaten like the chicken shawarma there a couple of times, which is really, really good. But this time, like, we had this massive table. And it was served family style, and they brought out all this different food, and it was like served on platters in like very small portions that you don't realize are filling you up until they bring like the third round,
the massive pile of meat
out, and then you're like, fuck, all these little portions like are really filling. And then, you know, so we enjoyed having dinner there. And then when we were done eating, some of us went outside to the patio to partake of hookah.
It was good.
And we also ordered desserts. And I had a vanilla milkshake. And then we ordered that stuff that
was Khalifa.
Khalima. Got it. Okay.
It's a Lebanese, like, cheese pastry thing.
Yeah.
With, like... lightly fried noodles, and the top is dyed orange, and there's crushed pistachios on it.
And then when you bite into it, it is really sweet and really smooth and just really yummy.
Yeah, you don't think it's a big-ass slice of cheese, but it is. It's fucking like goat cheese.
Yeah.
And it was just really unique.
Yeah. It's ridiculous how good this was. It's just like, damn, I'm going to have to get this again.
I really like the food there. That was really nice. I like food in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, you know, I actually ate like maybe one piece of any given bit of meat because I had already been like, oh, shit, they've got falafel.
Yeah,
oh, shit,
yeah.
They got this really good, like...
Oh, that garlic hummus. Butter
yeah.
stuff that wasn't the hummus. It was the other stuff. And I was still... I was still dipping the falafel in it. And
oh, it was so good.
Yeah, yeah.
Looking
amazing, man.
It was a really good night and great to put together.
Yeah, yeah.
That was fun.
So that was Friday. And then Saturday, what did
Saturday, you did a whole bunch of stuff, too.
Saturday, Tieran's family did a big barbecue out at their place. And we had lots of friends there and all of the family that had flown in from Tieran's side of the family. So there was a bunch of people there. And we had Khaki Doggy, the artist formerly known as Alex Vance. We flew him over from the Netherlands. And he was our wedding photographer because that's something that he's taken up. And he's done something like 8 or 9 weddings now already nice. And a bunch of other photography projects. So since he was our guest all weekend, because we had like 4 people crashing with us.
Uh-huh.
He filmed both the stag parties because some folks left mine after dinner because they didn't want to smoke. And they went over to Tieran so that they could see him, too. And he came along with us to the barbecue. And, of course, he was at the ceremony. So we got pictures of the whole weekend. We got lots of great pictures of the family and stuff like that. So that was super, super nice. I found out later I had to leave early to pick up Kyle from the airport. But Tieran's mom made us a quilt for our wedding.
Nice.
Which is – it looks super nice. And so we're going to have that on one of our sofas in the house.
Panther's mom made us one.
Oh, cool.
It's the ones you see on our couch a lot.
Yeah, yeah. They could totally talk about quilting together. Tieran's mom is like – actually goes to like quilting retreats,
you know,
and stuff like that.
There's probably a fairly decent chance that Panther's mom would know
Tieran's mom. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which would be funny. Mm-hmm. But it's totally possible.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, I'm not sure how big the community, quilting community is over here. But
North Texas, you know, east side versus west side, Fort Worth versus Dallas.
Yeah.
They have scissor duels. You know,
like, they come at you with their quilts, like wrap them around your head. I'm like, ah!
Thump. Then there's the rogue knitters. You know, they got they're going to knit themselves an Afghan. I'm American, too bad.
I'm going to knit you into a terrorist.
So that was fun.
That was Saturday. And then Sunday we had the wedding.
Yeah.
Which was pretty awesome. Yes. We had close to 60 people all together, all family and friends. Kyle, again, did an amazing job officiating the ceremony. We had Khaki doing the photos. Tieran and I both had a best man and a groomsman, which was on my side, Guardian and you.
Yep.
And on Tieran's side was Buck and Zia. And it was, I think it was really like an extra nice touch actually having friends involved in the ceremony with officiating. And, you know, because it's like, you know, Khaki didn't have a problem with, like, you know, getting close to people to take pictures and stuff like that. You know, it just kind of, when everyone involved knows us so well, you know, it's just, it's a lot nicer. And also, Tieran picked the venue, which was the Maggiano's up in Plano. And he picked that because he and I have eaten there frequently and he really likes the food and he wanted our wedding to just be memorable for being a good time and for everyone to enjoy a really good meal. And the nice thing about that also is that it's not a wedding specific venue that we rented for one day and we'll never ever be back to. Like, we go to that restaurant several times a year. So it's actually a place that has become you know, part of our lives because we do our romantic dinner out up there and stuff like that. So I think that's really cool as well. And we didn't have like a lot of bells and whistles and stuff. We didn't have flowers. We didn't have a lot of decorations or anything crazy like that. And yeah, that's what we figured. We didn't need it. It was, we had the ceremony. It only took like 20 minutes. And it was like, all right, let's get down and eat and enjoy the open bar and eat, drink, and be merry. And that was perfect. And we had a fucking massive wedding cake, which we still have some left over.
I still have a piece left from Tuesday's mandatory cake night.
Yeah, we had mandatory cake night when our friends came over on Tuesday and everybody had to have cake because we had so many leftovers. Both like a third of this sheet of wedding cake left, plus tiramisu and chocolate cake, plus spaghetti, chicken parmesan, and four cheese ravioli in these big pans left over from the restaurant. And we'd eaten out with Kyle and Buck later in the weekend and had leftovers from that. So like our fridge was just absolutely packed. So we've been eating the leftovers all week and can't complain because it's like really awesome Italian food.
And actually, that's what we did for podcast food tonight. We just went to your place and yeah, had some leftovers.
I was like, you know, do you want me to just heat you up some of our leftovers? Because
got a bunch of
we've got plenty of it and might as well save a couple bucks on eating out somewhere. I didn't feel like anything in particular anyway, so
yeah, I was just kind of like, I'm not that hungry.
But I was fine with my four cheese ravioli.
Yeah, two pieces of a few of those big raviolis and a half of a parmesan chicken, and I'm like,
you're done. Yeah, you didn't have any mandatory cake tonight, though.
I have some in the fridge.
Okay, all right. You must eat your mandatory cake.
I will get to it. So the next thing on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
So the wedding was really cool.
Yeah, I'm super waggy. You can see some of the tweets about it by looking up the hashtag gay wolf wedding.
Yeah. And people thought that was really funny.
Yeah, people enjoyed using that hashtag, and I made a blog post about it on my FA and LJ, so
yeah, and I mean just once you get some good photos from Khaki.
I got them this morning on the train on the way to work. So, and I'm looking at them on like my tiny 4-inch phone screen, which is totally not doing them any kind of justice, you know? Yeah. And I'm like, I can't wait to get home and actually pull them up on my monitor. But man, he had a really quick turnaround. You know, that was 4 days ago. And in between then, he flew home to the Netherlands overseas. And so I'm just amazed at the speed of his turnaround on producing the wedding pictures. So they're in various albums. So he's like, you can give, you know, family access to the ceremony and the barbecue, but not necessarily access to the stag party ones. Actually, I looked at the stag party pictures. There's really nothing much incriminating. You know, the worst thing in it is probably me exhaling a bunch of smoke from a hookah. But, I mean, all of Tieran's is just Tieran drinking various things and having goofy expressions on his face half the time. And, you know, that, yeah. It wasn't like, woo, when the straight people go home, the dicks come out. You know, that didn't actually happen.
What a shame.
Darn. Oh. So what else was on our podcast menu?
Well, there's this thing about video
games. Oh, wait. By the way, Shiva is not feeling good tonight. That's why it's just the two of us.
Yeah. Shiva has not just been very, very quiet. We didn't just unplug her mic and tell her to sit in the corner.
She's just been sitting here staring daggers at us this whole time. So there's a thing about video games.
There's a thing about video games. So I have no doubt that any of you that have half of an ounce of attention directed toward video gaming in general have been inundated, as Buzz makes jerk off motions.
Oh no, my hand fell asleep. So I'm leaning on the edge of the table.
Oh, okay.
And flexing my fist.
I thought you were just like
no,
like inundated with gum. No. inundated.
That would be preferable by to being inundated with drama.
The nonsense that if you're a gamer, you're a cis white male virgin neckbeard fedora wearing basement dwelling
shitlord.
So this has been going on for the last couple of weeks, and it happened before we happened after we recorded our last episode. It's been going and going and going. And Jesus Christ, has it been going?
Mm.
And it was an odd little spark that started the whole thing. So, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on that spark because it really is kind of pointless. Starts out with this woman, Zoe Quinn, who her ex-boyfriend posted a bunch of stuff online about how she had been cheating on him with five guys. And how some of these guys were involved in the gaming media in some form or another. And there was the usual, you know, oh, this is, you're just hating her because she's a woman, you're hating her, blah, blah. And it really has evolved away from that because, you know, yeah, Zoe Quinn, her behavior is pretty shitty. Like, if you're cheating on somebody, that's shitty. If you're cheating on somebody with five other somebodies, that's probably a good reason why he's your ex.
It's five times as shitty.
And we would certainly never condone that kind of behavior. But that's not what we're here to talk about. Why this even became a thing. Because there's a lot of deflection as to, oh, this is all about misogyny and all video gamers are horrible white cis males. Which, not like 2 days before this whole thing blew up, there was an article crowing the fact that, well, if you count everybody who plays a game, be it Words with Friends on their phone or Call of Duty on the Xbox, 52% of gamers are women. And then all this nonsense happens, and the gaming media, which I put as many quotation fingers around gaming media as I put around brony media. And
oh, snap. Comparing them to bronies, that's a low blow.
I know. I should really not I don't want to hurt the bronies' feelings by comparing them to game journalists.
Oh, shit! All right.
So basically, it wasn't the fact that she was in bed with gaming journalists. It was the fact that gaming journalists were in bed with her, which there's a distinction. It's like these people had these intimate interactions with people that then they would then talk about positively.
They should have been in bed with each other, you know, fucking and sucking, poking and choking over the Xbox controller.
Yeah, like using that rumble function.
Yeah, like the Kotaku headquarters are just dead silent except for the sound of belt buckles hitting the floor.
And butt fucking. So, and the next weird thing that happened was a bunch of websites, like 10 of them, all came out with articles claiming that gamers are either as an identity, a dying identity, or a failed demographic, or they don't have to be your target market, or they're awful people, or they're permavirgins, or misogynerds, which is a word somebody
coined. Oh my god, really?
Yes, I'm being serious.
That sounds like nerds that are training to be massage therapists.
Massage nerds.
Yeah.
I like video games, but I'm really good at working out the shoulder tension.
Mm.
So
the shoulder tension caused by hunching over a video game controller for too many hours.
So I just want to read a fairly quick article that's on Slate. And
you're not going to read the whole thing, are you? It's
really not that long. It's like a wall of text email. I'll maybe skip around. So it's, the title is Gaming Journalism is Over, and the author is David Auerbach, A-U-E-R-B-A-C-H.
I would just give a summary of it for possible copyright reasons.
Okay. So, some background. Recently, there were some egregious incidents of harassment in the gaming community, as I covered in a previous piece. The fight blew up on Twitter, Reddit, YouTube, gaming sites, 4chan, elsewhere, with rhetorical shrapnel flying everywhere. One ironic low was achieved when popular and resolutely positive gamer, God damn it, fucking bar keeps sliding up. Stephen Williams, aka Boogie 2988, found himself simultaneously maligned as a brainwashed feminist by self-declared men's rights activists and fat-shamed by self-declared social justice advocates. The attacks on the press ranged from well-reasoned offensive to paranoid, but the gaming journals unwisely decided to respond to the growing nebulous anger by declaring that gamers were dead. Such articles appeared concurrently in Gamma Sutra, Gamers Are Over, and A Guide to Ending Gamers, Destructoid, There Are Gamers at the Gate, but They Might Already Be Dead, Kotaku, We Might Be Witnessing the Death of an Identity, and Rock Paper Shotgun, Gamers Are Over, as well as Ars Technica, The Death of the Gamers, Vice, Killing the Gamer Identity, and BuzzFeed, Gaming is Leaving Gamers Behind. These articles share some traits in common besides their thesis. They're unconvincing, lacking in hard evidence, and fucking menu bar.
I guess it's not very mobile friendly.
No, it's not. And big on wishful thinking. A good number of them link to an obscure blog post by academic Dan Golding, The End of Gamers, which argues, again without evidence, that the gamer identity has been broken and the current unrest is an attempt to retain hegemony. Kotaku reader Nathan Grayson linked to a similarly obtuse piece of academic argot, Gamer is Shellfish, Conservative, and Tribalistic, which in Grayson's words break down the difference between gamer as a manufactured identity versus loving gamers and loving games on multiple level. And so, returning to the big world, the biggest problem is that they're all demonstrably untrue. If gamers really are dying, no one told the marketing departments for these publications would continue to trumpet their gamer demographic to advertisers. What is going on instead is projection. As long as these journalists held a monopoly in gaming coverage, they could maintain a dismal relationship with the audience in spite of the fact that most games coverage is almost indistinguishable from PR. In the words of disaffected game columnist Robert Florence, who himself wrote about corruption in gaming journalism before quitting Eurogamer. Basically, the deal is game companies and developers now reaching out to people directly. And enthusiasts, you know... gaming enthusiasts have a far better relationship with their people than anybody else. I mean, you know, you go to look at people like PewDiePie or Total Biscuit or even the aforementioned Boogie. You know, they have hundreds and thousands of followers, and they just do it for fun. They make some money from the monetization of their videos, but they aren't, you know, getting wine dined or sucked and fucked.
I should also note that I know little to nothing about, full disclosure, I know little to nothing about the gaming culture, so I'm going to be asking the hard questions.
Yeah.
Like, tell me about their cause. So I really want to know.
The article goes on that the articles were additionally unseemly because gamers were being preached to by the very same people who had been commodifying them. As Florence said, so much of the game journalist's job has indeed been glorified PR, and the rest is not reportage, but cultural think pieces, like the ones which have earned so much opprobrium over the last week. Consequently, great lesser-known stories and games fell by the wayside. There's been talking about how people that have been, you know, because this nonsense has been going for 2 weeks, there's been stuff going on in the gaming world which has been largely ignored because, well, Gamergate. And the article concludes, maybe gamers don't trust their press as much as they trust the enthusiasts because the press doesn't seem as engaged with the games themselves. Compared with the enthusiasts, the journalists' hearts aren't in it. This is true for criticism of other art forms. Sure, there are always hack writers, but Paul Kael doesn't have to put together five hype-building posts about Destiny for each thoughtful review they write. Gaming journalists are caught between capitalist reality and their own frustrated aspirations to be serious cultural critics. But they cannot solve their problems by preaching about the death of their audience. That audience is dying only in that it is leaving them, a process the journalists have evidently decided to accelerate. Game journalists are rage-quitting their meal tickets. So yeah, read the full article. I kind of condensed most of it. But yeah, gaming journalism is over. And it's really interesting because, as I mentioned earlier, they're trying to say that 52% of gaming is women. And then 100% of gamers are awful misogynists, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, cishet white males.
Right.
Who should check their privilege. And so you can't have your cake and fuck it too.
So my confusion about this is that up until now, I have been led to believe that gamers were basically shitlords. You know, we've made fun of gaming culture on here on the past, talking about, well, Xbox Live, and I want to be called a faggot by a 12-year-old, and, you know, stuff like that. So from the outside looking in, I mean, even other gamers would complain about how shitty, homophobic, and misogynistic gamers were. So that's kind of at odds with what the gaming community is now saying, that it's a much more diverse community and that's being celebrated.
Well, that's the thing. The gaming community openly admits, and I totally admit, there's some real fucking assholes out there.
Right.
In the gaming community, there are some real fucking douchebags. But to blanket statement the entirety of gamers as a monolithic group,
mm-hmm.
as misogynistic, homophobic, this fedora-wearing neckbearded virgins who live in their mother's basement, is bullshit.
Right.
And so you have the hashtag not your shield, mm-hmm. which is basically minorities who are gamers, black people, Asians, gays, lesbians, transgender people.
Mm-hmm.
And basically they're like, yeah, you guys don't speak for me. Don't use me as a shield to deflect criticism from you. Because, you know, I'm 31. I've been gaming since I was 6 or 7. My parents had an Atari 2600. I had a Nintendo. I got a Super Nintendo the year it came out. I bought my PlayStation. I bought my PlayStation 2. I bought my Saturn. I bought my Dreamcast. I got given a GameCube for Christmas 1 year. And we own a 360. We own a Wii. And we own a PlayStation 3.
I'll be damned if any of you damn filthy apes try to take my games.
You can have my games when you pull it from my cold, dead hands. Pew, pew.
Unfortunately, it only shoots light.
Ting, ting. You know, it has a damn spring in it.
Yeah.
So
I found it very interesting from that because, frankly, gamers are shitlords has kind of been a narrative that I've heard most of my life.
Then
you see this come up and I'm like, whoa, that's not cool that chick cheated on her boyfriend and that there was nepotism in the gaming and journalistic community that allowed her to fucking suck her way into getting an award-winning game made.
Yeah, basically a series of web pages.
So that's bullshit. And you should be able to criticize that and still believe that women who are gamers should be respected on equal terms.
Well, yeah, that should be basic fucking human decency.
But apparently that's not the case, because anyone who's criticized Zoe Quinn's actions has basically been attacked and called misogynistic. And I'm like, that ain't right.
and see, I kind of wish Shiva was here because she would have a woman gamer's perspective on this.
Right.
Because she plays World of Warcraft. She's played a whole bunch of other games. She's been gaming longer than maybe some of us.
Yeah.
But
maybe we can have her put her 2 cents in on this in a couple weeks, unless it's just not.
Well, this will probably be something to discuss next week. We're not going to overdo it. Because I'm sure there's a lot of people that are really sick about it because this has been going for 2 fucking weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as I mentioned, the it's actually starting to impact the websites that basically took the tack of fuck the gamers.
I really have to say I'm surprised that all these big websites that are only big because they post articles about gaming content and gamers read their gaming content and that's their audience, you know, would basically say, fuck gamers, they're a bunch of misogynistic pigs. And I'm like, that would be like me owning For a Planet and then saying, fuck furries, they're all creepy and weird.
Yeah.
You know? And just be like, I don't want to deal with furries anymore. I want to deal with fans of anthropomorphics. Because that's kind of the weird distinction that they're trying to make.
Yeah.
They're trying to say, we're not serving gamers, we're serving people who play video games.
It's like, that's the same fucking thing.
So,
well, I mean, but you're right. There are the furries that are like, I'm a fan of anthropomorphics, not I'm a furry.
Right. But, and that would be totally inappropriate for me as the owner of a furry business. You know, if I said that, it would be career suicide as far as the success of my business goes.
Or us saying, you know, Knotcast will now only take questions from straight people.
Right, yeah.
We'd never get an email again.
Because we know all about that. But.
Yeah. And, you know, and the sites that haven't gotten embroiled in this, which oddly enough is like IGN and GameSpot, they mm-hmm. haven't had a problem. But all the sites which have been like bitching and moaning about how gamers are awful, well, what do you fucking know? People are dropping their websites. I dropped Destructoid. I unfollowed Jim Sterling because he was being a fat cunt. And, you know,
normally fat cunt is a good thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I was
check out
like,
that fat cunt on Rainbow Dash.
Yeah. Mm.
Anyway, you were saying.
BRB
so, fapping.
That one fucking GIF I showed you.
You want to do what inside me?
It's just really bizarre that they would do this. And there's going to be a long-term effect. And what's interesting is that there has been a coordinated effect to basically go after these sites' advertisers. Basically mm-hmm. going, hey, you know, we don't appreciate this website that you're advertising on calling us shit. We don't appreciate this group that you want that is pimping Destiny to us, which is a video game,
mm-hmm.
and is also telling the people that play games like Destiny just awful people, misogynistic fuckheads. And so it actually has forced several of the websites to backtrack, like The Escapist, which I had dropped a while back. Basically, their website owner had to be like, yeah, we're gonna evaluate what kind of stuff is allowed on our Twitter, because apparently some people who had access to the Escapist Twitter
had said some shit.
And using the Escapist website Twitter. And so, you know, there's been websites that have had to back down, and journalists who have since apologized, not because they sincerely believe it. Not that they might have sincerely believed what they were saying before.
I doubt it. They were just trying to please
toe the line.
Please what they thought was a substantial portion of their audience. It turned out not to be the case, so now they're backtracking.
They're
the other
backtracking
direction.
And their bosses are going, Jesus Christ, you fucking moron! You just cost us fucking EA. You cost us fucking Square Enix. You cost us Ubisoft. You know. Mm-hmm. I don't fucking know who else. You know, I'm not going to say I know advertisers leaving. What specific advertisers leaving, but I know that there has been an impact enough for companies to tell their people to knock it the fuck off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the bottom fucking line, is like the dollar wins.
Yeah.
You can think you're as righteous as possible, but when you're shitting on basically the entire market you're trying to market to, it's not good for your wallet, for your company's wallet. It's not good for people's jobs either.
Mm-hmm.
People should not be harassed, and people shouldn't be vilified and abused. But the media, quotation marks, doesn't have a right to shit on its market and expect them to continue to support them.
I find it interesting that one of the things that interested me in that article was talking about how Nintendo has largely said fuck the gaming journalism already. Because they're the one company that pulled out of one of like the major conferences for launching shit, right? Mm-hmm. They do their own thing.
They weren't at E3 this year. Well, they were at E3. They mm-hmm. actually did. But E3 has been known for their lavish hour-plus-long video presentations and incredibly expensive to rent theaters mm-hmm. with fuckloads of effects and nonsense. And Nintendo said, fuck that.
Hmm.
Our core demographic is the hardcore gamers. So you know what we're going to do? We're just going to do a Nintendo Direct from our website.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have like this fucking lavish booth, and we're going to be doing little miniature presentations all throughout E3. And it cost them a lot less money, and it got people a lot more excited for their shit because they could go and play it. Mm-hmm. A lot of their stuff was demos that people mm-hmm. could try out. And their Playhouse stream, which is what they call Nintendo Playhouse or whatever, where they detailed some of their upcoming initiatives and products, got a lot more favorable coverage because it wasn't just this massive orgy of information.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you have like the day goes, it's like Microsoft, Ubisoft, EA, Sony, and you have like 8 or 9 hours of nonstop gaming bullshit. News and announcements and previews and first looks and all this stuff that makes gamers' boners rock hard. And I'll admit, I really enjoy watching that shit.
Mm-hmm.
I dig getting to see the cool new stuff that gets me excited about their product. Because I'm a gamer. I like video games. But Nintendo's is on the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And they put on their show. And they get that day. You know? They don't have to compete with the news from Sony or Microsoft or Ubisoft or EA. They're like, Nintendo, check us out. It's a me, Nintendo. Bippity boppity. And like they just did another Nintendo Direct ahead of the Tokyo Game Show,
mm-hmm.
where they're not doing like any big gaming presentation. They're like, we got some cool shit. We got some new hardware. Check it out. They basically bumped up the new model of the 3DS to have about as much power as the Wii, their previous generation system.
Wow.
So they're going to be porting some of the older titles from the Wii onto the 3DS.
Hmm.
Not quite as powerful, but it still is closer than that is.
Interesting.
That's like GameCube-ish,
mm-hmm.
which is the two generations back.
Right, yeah.
The third and the fourth. So
8-bit,
this is so
super.
Yeah, it was NES, Super, 64, GameCube, Wii U. So 7th gen, Jesus Christ.
I only counted 6. I missed one.
NES, NES, Super NES, N64, GameCube, Wii U.
4, 5, 6.
That's 6. I can't count.
Yeah. You weren't using your thumb for
some. Oh my god, reason. I lost a thumb. Jesus Christ, I can't play video games anymore.
I lost my thumb in the gaming wars.
And so, you know, it is funny because really the only games that I'm buying recently have either been PC games from people that largely don't get involved with bullshit like this,
mm-hmm.
and 3DS titles.
PC games to play on your Mac.
Yeah. Because Windows 7 works really, really well. Boot, motherfucker.
You can hear me over the headphones, right?
Yeah.
Oh god, it's so quiet.
I know, it's great, but you noise. Can see our voices.
Okay,
you cool. can see our voices in the waveform. That's actually why I made the GarageBand window top, so we can verify that yeah, shit's going through.
Okay, it is actually recording. Okay, Panther adjusted some of the settings on
Jesus
our box.
Christ, it's been 43 minutes already. And
that's fine.
No, and, I'm just like surprised.
Yeah.
So basically. Like what you fucking like, don't be a douchebag to other people, and don't fuck your way to the top.
Unless you're an aspiring furry author, then...
Suck all the Fuzzwolf dicks you want.
Yeah, I don't mind. No, not really.
but yeah, I mean, other than that, hey, I've been playing some Final Fantasy 14, and my cat girl's really cute.
I got the proof of one of our new Rainforest books in the mail today.
Yes.
Dude, Where's My Fox? By Kyle Gold.
And this one has a twist. What's the twist?
The wolf is a bottom.
Aw, shit.
That wolf is a bottom.
It's a new paradigm in furry fiction.
Look at foxes writing books and turning things on their heads. And
it just ain't right. The matriarchy.
I can't make wolf hierarchy a thing. It just sounds too odd and awkward.
Yeah.
Like Moon Moon.
Damn it, Moon Moon.
Speaking of Moon Moon, Face Reg got released.
Yeah.
And the wolf in it's called Moon Moon because they couldn't agree on what to call him. And he's the non-morphic wolf. There's also an anthropomorphic wolf who looks pretty cool. And you can adjust all of his colors and everything like that. So you can make him a fucking nuclear wolf if you want, you know, or just a regular colored wolf. And, of course, there's that Totes Adorbs panda. Mm-hmm. There's also a vixen. So that's like at least 3 furry characters there. And then there's the demon dude. There's an anime girl.
Dog.
There's Doge, yeah. Yeah. And there's the kind of stereotypical manly game hero character with like the big laser gun or something like that.
Because why not?
Because, yeah.
Because male power fantasies.
That's right. The patriarchy. The game. The soundtrack. The game soundtrack.
The dick.
The dick. So I've fiddled with that a little bit. I have not had time to really play with it. I'd love to fiddle with it some more. Maybe make some Skype calls. Because you can do that and your image will show up as your face rigged character. Which would be cool. But I got the professional version.
You can say that word on this podcast. It's not a dirty word.
Because I backed it at that level. But
I didn't back it. I was just like, that's cool. But I was kind of skeptical. But now I'm kind of like, oh, people are saying it's really cool.
In order to download it, I had to install Steam. Because that's how it's distributed. And I had never had Steam before. So now I have a Steam account. And I've made sure that I'm permanently not available for chat or whatever the setting was.
But you don't want to play video games with me?
But because I don't play video games.
I know you don't.
And if you need to know I'm on FaceRig, well, you're not really on FaceRig. You'd be on Skype or something using the FaceRig. But I wonder how that works. I have to like call into one of your podcasts one day as a wolf.
And oh, man.
Like, hi, I'm Buzzwolf. You can put a little scarf on the Anthro Wolf and it looks kind of gay. Cute. It's so cute.
So Panther just came in and put a piece of paper on my keyboard. So one of my goals for losing all my weight was to be able to go to Six Flags and ride me some fucking roller coaster.
Uh-huh.
And this last weekend, Six Flags was doing this ridiculous, like, it was $84 for the 2015 season pass that also includes the parking pass, which also includes Hurricane Harbor, which also includes parking for Hurricane Harbor, access to every Six Flags in the country, and access for the rest of 2014. So, Fright Fest and Holiday in the Park. Nice. You have to go to the park twice to pay for that fucking thing.
Yeah.
It's like $64 to go into Six Flags right now.
Jeez.
Last I knew.
I mean, so if you're into that, that season pass thing is a pretty good deal.
Like, I'm fucking hype. I've lost enough weight. I can go fucking ride roller coasters again. I haven't been able to do that for like 6 fucking years, dude. And so I'm like, I'm not going to be able to do it until maybe next weekend, because they're only open on weekends right now, I think.
Hmm.
But I'm also really looking forward to going during, like, Fright Fest, because it'll be in October, and I love Fright Fest, and I'll get to go to that.
When it scares the shit out of you, you'll lose even more weight.
Yes!
My bowels are empty.
And a Holiday in the Park's always fun. It's cold as shit, so why not ride roller coasters that go 70 miles an hour?
Your scream will be frozen to your face.
Yes. I'm really excited for that because I'm proud of my progress and I have a lot more to go, but still that I've been able to do that is like, it was my goal for 2015 to get a season pass and I have.
Dong, dong. Yeah.
Oh no, the cloister bell. Quickly to the TARDIS. So, yeah.
So, do you want to take a break?
We should probably pause because, holy fuck, congratulations if you listen to this 50 minutes or so of us bullshitting and talking about totally not relationship nonsense but other stuff in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations. Give yourself a high five. We're going to stop. I'm going to put a song in and we're going to talk about Adam and Eve so you can vibrate your bits and we'll be back.
Is a life of a true party, phony with sugar and spice aren't enough of a kick.
What's a girl to do when she's tired of the shtick? It's not so bright to sick of partying, but you don't even know what else to do. You're stuck in this high, but you're feeling so low. You just wanna cry, but laughing's all you know. How can you tell when you're not entertained? If this keeps up, you'll probably just go insane. Then you're just not okay. When all they see in you is dreamers and gay. No more shindigs, no more jubilees, no more fun. This party's over, friends, just go home. Fuck it, I'm done, like, hey. Just one more bottle, one more hit. The voices in your head are split between a change of weather or another vodka bender. White as broken glass, sing to have more clarity. Oh, is this it? Is this the end? You've isolated your best friend. There's nothing left for you to bend, and your reflection makes you cringe. And lonely, yeah, there's a room for making. Now can you tell when you're not entertained? If this keeps up, you'll probably just go insane. Just not okay. When all they see in you is dreamers and cake. No more shindigs, no more jubilees, no more fun. This party's over, friends, let's go home. Fuck it, I'm done. Goodness gracious, pink balls of fire.
Back.
That was Sick of Partying by Kane.
Well, I knew it wasn't going to be by Andrew W.K. because he's never sick of partying.
Yes.
Okay, I have an item picked out to talk about from AdamandEve.com, our sponsor. It is the A&E Easy Anal Buddy.
Aw, yeah.
So this thing looks pretty cool. And it's good for beginning and intermediate anal sex users. It's about 9 inches long. It's purple, and the length varies as it goes down, and it has various sizes bulges around it. So it's supposed to just slide right in pretty easy. So if you're not used to taking like a big fat cock or anything like that, you can try this out. So it should get in there pretty deep. And it also vibrates, which should be pretty good. It says it is good for both male and female. And several of the reviews from women have talked about having their man in their vagina while they've been using this, and the man can feel the vibrations through them.
Ooh.
And it makes it feel better for both of them. So that's pretty cool. That's what it – I'm going to turn my iPad around here. That's what it looks like.
Kind of like little anal beads.
Yeah, they're a bit strung together as a toy. So it's only $19.95 anyway, so fairly inexpensive to try out some anal fun. If you use our coupon code NOT,
A-N-O-T,
it drops it down to half price, so it's only like $9.98, and you get free shipping instead of the $5 shipping that you normally get. And if you add a couple extra bucks to spend more than $17, then you can get an additional free mystery gift. So,
but fun.
that's my picked out item that sounds pretty cool to me. And yeah, looks like it should be a lot of fun. So
sweet.
Give that a shot. You know what? It looks like a purple unicorn horn.
Oh.
You know, it's a, you know.
Twily.
Be like being pegged in the ass by a unicorn. Be great. And on that note, good night, Big Ball. Now, we're going to read some emails.
Right? Yes. I will read the first email because we have a few, but hopefully they're not that long. Okay. This is titled, subject is called Murray Purry. I wish I had seen that your last episode had that title. Sorry, I'd have sent this in time. It's just for fun. D. Murray Purry Furpile by De Otter. Tune, Holly Jolly Christmas. See, copyright 1965, Johnny Marks. Have a hurry, Murray Purry Furpile. Murray it's the best part of the con. I don't care if we're still there a quarter after dawn. In a Murray Purry fur pile, we can cuddle up en masse. But we say, please stay away to anyone with gas. Purr, a bunch of fur piled where we can see. In the convention space, not in the lobby. It's a Murray Purry fur pile, and if everyone's too hot. Hey there, furry, have a Murray Purry fur pile or not. You're welcome, guys.
Oh, Jesus. I can't believe we did it. I was just going to be like, nah, this is silly. Fuck it.
But, no. She'll sing.
We should have saved that for a Christmas episode. Okay. I will read the next thing. It is a Tumblr anon ask. So, Dear Notcast, I have a friend who lives several states away, has depression, and is having suicidal thoughts again. And no matter how I tried, I can't get him to think away from wanting to shoot himself. I finally had enough and told him I care for him, but I can't deal with it anymore since he is not listening anymore and nothing I can do to help. So I stopped talking to him. I know you all have said to do this with other people, and I'm wondering if I really did the right thing. We've advised that, you know,
after a certain point,
you can only help somebody so much. And he lives several states away. And if you're not in his immediate area or his immediate family or something like that, you're kind of limited in what you can do. I mean, you might want to get in touch with some of his family or local friends and make sure that they're aware of, you know, what his current thought process is and see if they can help. But it's really hard to stage an intervention long distance. And you also have to look out for your own mental health. And if talking to him is starting to really take it out of you, then you might got to step back a little for your own sanity.
That's, I mean, it's hard, but
yeah,
there's only so much you can do and so much you can take emotionally.
Yeah, if you're really worried about it, try to get in touch with somebody closer to him and maybe see if they can help him. Yeah.
So the next one, Anonymous asked a question. You're not cast. I support trans people and their desire to be who they really are. But when it comes to relationships to me with them, I can't look past what they once were as much as I try. Like one girl I wanted to date, but when she told me she wanted to become male, I told her I supported her choice, but we couldn't have a relationship. We're still friends, but I do feel bad, though. Is it wrong that I can't look past what they once were, even though I support them? Sad mutt.
That's a really complex question, and I don't think that there is a one-answer-fits-all. I think it really comes down to the individuals involved in the situation. And if you're, I mean, you wanted a relationship with this person, if they're transitioning to male and you're not gay, I don't see any problem with not wanting to have a relationship outside of friendship.
And I mean, that's completely fair. I mean, it's going to be disappointing to the person, maybe if they had reciprocal feelings, but yeah. If they want to transition to male, or if you're female and the male you liked was wanting to transition to female and you're not a lesbian, and you're not, you know, I mean, there are people that will look past it and say, you know, fuck genitals, the person.
Yeah. It depends, like I said, it depends on the person. And some people are very, very straight. Some people are in the middle or like androgynous individuals, so it really doesn't matter what's below the waist.
Heteroflexible.
Yeah. But if you're not, then don't, basically, in order to support them, you have to consider her a man because she's transitioning to male. If you don't want to date a man, then don't date a man.
Yeah.
Even if they used to be a woman in
and,
body.
You know, and I know some, at least one ostensibly very straight dude who completely fell for a male to female transgender person, and they mm-hmm. had a good relationship, a sexual relationship for a while. Things didn't work out, but it wasn't because of their genitals.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, some people will just be like, this person, and some people care a lot more about the genitals. And that's not to say you're wrong. Some people will say that you're a terrible person for it. I'm not going to.
Yeah, I'm not going to either. And, you know, the emailer says they're still friends. And that's really what you need to be. I mean, if you had said, I can't be this friends with this person anymore because they used to be a girl,
we might call you an asshole then.
Then I'd say that you should probably, you know, do some thinking about your outlook on things.
Yeah.
But you're not saying that.
You're still friends with them.
So I think you're being perfectly reasonable. And you know, hopefully your friend understands where you're coming from, and it's good that you guys can still be friends.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get some feedback on this one because we do have trans listeners who can give their perspectives, and hopefully they'll write in because, you know, we are a pair of cis white dudes, and, well, the cis is the only part that really matters, you know, but still, we, you know, so we don't have that experience. Next one.
Okay. So I guess I read this one then. All right. Roll for bluff check. I'm sorry you rolled a natural one. Your character is now dead.
Oh, man, not Blackleaf.
I have no idea what any of that meant. Good afternoon, Notcasters. Friendly Neighborhood Otter here. The first part of this email is addressed to the fur from last week, which was probably several weeks ago now, about keeping an unloaded gun in the house and using it to threaten and scare off home invaders. Yeah, I wasn't on that episode, and I would have totally been like, fuck no! Keeping an unloaded gun in the house to scare off invaders is not really any safer than keeping it loaded. Point a gun at someone and say, leave or I'll shoot, is a threat on their life. A threat without the intent or ability to follow through is not a threat, it's a bluff. A gun is a very dangerous thing to be bluffing with because it instantly aggravates a confrontation from dangerous to life-threatening. Pulling a gun on a home invader removes the middle ground from the confrontation. Either they will yield, or it'll attack you to protect themselves. If the person is only armed with a bat or a knife, they might run, but they may take a chance on closing the distance and attacking you before you can fire. If they have a gun of their own, there's a chance they'll panic and start shooting at you instead. If your gun isn't loaded, you've now put yourself and everyone near you in a life-threatening situation with no means to defend yourself. Avoiding the political debate, if you're going to own a gun for self-defense, you need to do it properly. Research what weapon would be appropriate for home defense, train with it, and learn how to minimize the risks involved in having it in the house. Anything less than that is a pointless risk to your life. And then there's a separate section on to less serious topics. I graduated college in 2008. This is less advice for surviving and more advice for making college worth your while. In high school, it was easy to do the bare minimum to pass the class with a satisfactory grade. You could even ace all your classes without too much effort. In college, that practice will hurt you. The experience you get in class isn't going to be enough to make you a desirable employee in the real world. If you know what you want to do with yourself after college, you need to be practicing and getting more experience with what you want to do outside of the classroom. You don't have to completely forfeit your social life, but if you haven't done anything outside of schoolwork, it tells potential employers that you have no ambition to do things on your own. Having projects that you did yourself will go a long way towards saying, yes, I can do what you need me to do. What you need me to. My bad. If you're getting educated with programming, make your own programs and games at home. If you're training to be a mechanic, research the latest and greatest engines and buy a cheap junker to fix up. It doesn't really matter what you do, as long as you're practicing and improving outside of what your school obligates you to do. Just a little advice I wish I'd taken seriously when I was starting. Foxglove. That's okay. Actually not a bad point, and it actually goes somewhat to our, I think we discussed this a little bit on the show about how if you're heavily involved on a con staff, if you're volunteering for a charity, if you're organizing events, taking any kind of responsibility for that, for things, even if it's within a fandom setting, not necessarily furry, but any fandom setting, you could totally, excuse me, reword that and put that on your resume, because that is a skill you had. And just because you might not have learned it in a classroom or been trained to do it in a job you were being paid for a company, it's still a skill you possess, and it's something that you should use to market yourself to potential employers.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, look at you. You run a business in addition to what you do for a job.
Right.
You know, and for me, I do the audiobook stuff. Mm-hmm. I run a convention. I'm part of Fiesta as a board, as a director and a staffer, and have been for, God, since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all these things would go on a resume.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, but I'm part of a furry con. Yeah, but you're part of an or a larger organization, which
yeah.
thus far has not cratered into the ground.
And I wouldn't even necessarily couch it like that initially. You know, I would say I was a board member for drama organization name and say, you know, it's a 501c whatever.
Seven
or C7. Okay. It's a 501c7
not-for-profit
organization that's raised X amount of dollars at this time for
$50,000.
Yeah, for this charity that helps wild animals, and you know, I'm one of the 9 people responsible for decision making in the direction of this corporation. And you know, that sounds really impressive mm-hmm. on a resume. I mean, I don't think we all feel super impressive and important when we're having a board meeting. It's just what we're doing to keep our furry con going.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and a lot of times when you're doing shit in a hobby sense, you don't stop and think about what it looks like from the outside world, you know? And from the outside world, we're board members on a fucking corporation. That's
kind of a big deal.
Kind of a big deal. And the fact that it is a charitable organization and is raising money for charity, that looks really good. Because corporations these days really like people that are socially involved in their community, you know.
Yeah.
That's why they have stuff like the volunteer days and everything like that. And it looks good on you if you do that kind of thing. And I didn't have the business the last time I was between jobs. But if I had to go out and find a new job tomorrow, I would totally write up all the shit I know running for Planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all that business management experience, and that would make me, you know, I don't have a bachelor's degree, but I put all that stuff on there, and that would make me a much better candidate than just saying, well, I did this job and I did this job and not put any of my sideline stuff in there.
Yeah.
That is all money I'm leaving on the table.
Well, also, I mean, hell, even something like this, I mean, it shows dedication. Considering we've done this for 262 regular episodes.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's a hardcore dedication to a hobby, and that shows that you can, you know, stick to stuff.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, there's lots of different ways you can market yourself.
Yeah.
That is not just, I went to school and got good grades.
Yeah. So, you know, sorry, we kind of tangented it off there, but that dude raised...
that was a good point.
A good point, and so,
you know,
fair point.
GG.
You want to go to the next one?
This one's titled, A Very Confused Fox. Dear Notcast, I have a friend who is in my college classes, and I have been in love with her since freshman year. I am now a junior.
Important to note, the word love is in quote marks.
As he says in the next sentence, I say love in quotations.
Fuck. Okay, I was trying to help.
She has been confused as to her emotions, and I want to help her, but every time I asked if I can help, she just says that she'll deal with it. So, you awesome furs, you provided me with inspiration and entertainment. Could you now help me with what I haven't been able to grasp? Backstory time. I'm just a year younger than my lovely counterpart, talk to her regularly, and often wind up saying something that should friendzone me, but she either lets the topic die or laughs at my stupidity. Her let's say minor problem is that some emotions from the past have risen, and now she finds herself second-guessing herself about whether she truly loves me or the old boyfriend. I'm really unsure as to what to do, because she regularly tells me that she loves me and not to worry, but I can't help but worry. Is this me, or is it really something that I should worry about? Ever the faithful listener, Box Crasher the Fox.
Hmm. Usually it's the guy that pulls out the X card and does something dumb with it.
Yeah. Honestly, dude, we're going to actually reference the previous email. Focus on your schooling. Disregard bitches, acquire degree. No. You know, it's one of those things that if she's not going to communicate with you on that level, she's not going to let you know what's wrong. You're just going to have to let it go. I'm not saying, like, cut things off or not be your friend or not be your boyfriend. I'm saying you're just going to have to shrug and let her work that shit out on her own, because you can't force her to love you in the level that you want her to do. And, you know, as you said, she's trying to figure things out. Well, she's still going to have to figure that out. You can't push that along. And if you try to, she's going to, you know, probably not react very well. I mean, sometimes you just have to kind of wait and see how it plays out. Yeah, she says she loves you, and you take her word on it. Trust her on that. And she'll work it out in time, and you're still her friend. And that's just kind of how it's going to have to go. You can't really force issues like this with other people and expect it to go your way. Because even if you force it, they'll resent you. Most people will.
So, wait a minute, where was what I was saying here? Well, first of all, I was going to say it depends on your relationship, because I know that for Tieran and I, when I'm in that nothing's wrong, I don't want to talk about it mood, even though there clearly is. Maximum
scowl, nothing is wrong, I'm fine.
Yeah. Tieran goes into badger mode and does what he calls emotional digging, which is just keeps pushing at me until out with it already, you know, and I tell him what's on my mind. And then we talk through it, and I'm usually feeling better by the end of it.
Well, yeah,
but that's also based on our very long-term, very close relationship.
Yeah,
if you're only sort of dating or friends, you may not have.
It's like the 3 years, because he says freshman, and now he's a junior.
Right. I mean, you may not have the leverage or the oral dexterity to kind of navigate a potential minefield of that conversation.
Yeah.
If she is telling you that she really loves you, take her at face value. Make sure that she knows that you're there for her, so that if she does or needs to open up, you know, she knows that she can count on you as someone to talk to. I'm really kind of torn on this, because I don't exactly know. The dynamics of every relationship are a little bit different. So I'm somewhere between force her to talk about it and let it go. You know, it's a very delicate situation. that you're going to kind of have to navigate by feel as to how comfortable the situation may be.
Again, I mean, this is a college relationship. It's not, you know, what works for Fuzz and Tyrion probably might not work for you, given that, you know, you've got, what, 12, 13 years under your belt at this point?
13.
So.
Okay.
So, hopefully that's semi-helpful.
I guess we had raised a college?
Yeah, like 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Maybe.
And we didn't get any emails for it. And then
we got a bunch of emails.
Then we got a bunch of emails for it, like the week after.
Okay, I guess. All right, so have we done the college episode yet, or did we
Yeah,
just
we
not?
Did it, and we didn't. We got like three emails that week.
Now we got like
so,
a whole
yeah,
bunch
the,
of them.
Previous episode, wasn't that just me and Shiva?
Might have been.
Yeah, we just had like a few episodes. We talked, and the whole episode was like 45 minutes long.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, yay, making
college.
Up for it.
Okay. All right, college. Oh, was that the week, the Thursday before my marriage then? Because it would have been just the two of you?
Nope.
Oh.
I don't know.
Did you guys
know? Basically, maybe we put it out there and then we did the show, but nobody wrote in about the topic that week. I don't know. Just read the
Sorry.
Email.
Sorry. Bleh. I took that on a tangent and didn't need to go on. My bad. Okay. College survival tips for the queer student. College is difficult enough for the straight white male. You forgot cis. Ciscom. And certainly harder for any variations in gender, sex, sexuality, race, and or religion. You forgot alien species. Choose your college wisely because you want to keep your undergraduate degree to a maximum of 4 years. Transferring is very time intensive, particularly because you have to apply while keeping up with schoolwork. Selecting what schools you want to apply to is your choice and not your parents or guidance counselors. Normally, I advocate to pick a school based on your subject of interest. However, for queer students, campus climate is much more important. Pick through the student life pages looking for a mention of the Ally program or a dean or office of multicultural affairs. You can also contact student activities about the status of any groups on campus because you cannot go off the website. My alma mater went through periods of high and low activity, and I expected a group to be there as a freshman, and it was defunct. Lastly, look at school policies. They should have a statement on bias and harassment that should include gender and sexual expression or something similar. Some schools also offer housing choices that are more attractive to queer students. For example, some schools have gender-free, gender-neutral housing options. From there, it is simply a matter of academic preferences. Reach out to professors so you have some faculty connections. When it comes to financial tips, I recommend that even if you can't possibly afford a certain school, if you really want to go, trying doesn't hurt. Many schools have enough money to offer financial aid to any student they accept if they qualify. Those tips will hopefully get you onto a college campus where you will feel safe and comfortable. Once you're there, look for friends with similar interests unrelated to problematic issues surrounding sexuality and furry. Having activist friends is 100% fine, but activist culture brings a lot of depression and burnout. Trust me, my Facebook is as depressing as an actual news feed. If you ever feel sick, or quote-unquote sick, go to health services and take their advice. It should be good, hopefully. I did not take their advice, and my grades suffered greatly. Be open with any impediments that interfere with your education. Unfortunately, I often waited to tell professors I was being treated for depression when a paper was already 1 week late and I missed a week of classes. Depression is really common, and it is important to get help because in college it is covered by your tuition. It beats waiting until after you graduate and have to pay $200 for hour-long therapy sessions. Otherwise, just have fun and enjoy your hopefully 4 years of education and living on your own. Take classes from as many professors as you can in your first 2 years, and for the last 2 years, take several classes from three different professors that like you and you do good work for. They will be your future recommendations, and you want them to know you better than that kid in their one class that one term who performed well. I'm going to add an aside here on that advice because of what happened to a furry that I work with that he went back to his professor to get a recommendation, and the professor said it was his policy not to write recommendations. So if you follow this plan of advice, find out whether it's the professor's personal policy to write recommendations or not. And if they don't, then if you want to follow this writer's advice, then you would have the opportunity to go with somebody else at that point. Just as an aside.
Yeah, or hopefully one of the three professors that this writer recommends is friendly to recommendations.
Well, it's not like getting a 1 out of 3. You probably want to have more than one recommendation. So I just wanted to put that out there that some professors have a weird thing about recommendations. So final word of advice, don't fall in with a crowd taking GREs and applying to graduate school for the fall immediately after graduating. Take a break and apply a year or two after, and don't be afraid to look outside of your home country. I spent 10 months in London and got an MA for less money and less time than in the US. That is all the tips I can think of that aren't necessarily common sense. Cameo.
Cool. That is quite good, especially coming from somebody who went through it.
Yes.
It is a regret of mine that I never got to go to a proper college. I mean, that I didn't go through that experience that seems to be so transformative and stressful and debt-inducing as that may be.
You didn't get to go and live in the ASB dorm for a year. And
where everyone's a gay fox.
Yeah, you'd get fucked by 5 guys and all over the place.
I don't regret not having a shitload of debt, though.
Sneak up into a tree and watch your straight friend masturbating through the window.
Then fall.
Yeah. And get cum all over your pretty dress.
Good old ASB.
Oh, sorry, I totally slipped into 1990s fuzz there for a second.
Yeah. But okay. Yeah, the gender and sexual expression and stuff like that, that's really important because, you know, I feel really bad for these people that end up like, oh, I'm going to go to this Christian school. Don't do that. If you are not a cishet individual, don't go to a Christian school. You are not going to have a good time, and you may waste a fuckload of money.
Mm.
Even if it is your parents. So, goodness, there's another one. Lots of tips. All right. College experience and tips. See, it's great. We got a bunch of topical emails like a week after we asked for them.
See, if we could think of topics further in advance, we could do topics like 2 weeks out, post them to FA, gather more intel.
Yeah. We'd have to think up a list of topics.
Yeah. Then again, I mean, at least we do have content this week. Oh, so that's good.
Dear Notcast, now that I'm all caught up, I think I remember you saying at the end of episode 260 that your theme for the next episode was going to be college tips. I had wanted to write in, but I didn't end up having the time. As it turns out, though, you didn't touch on topic in episode 261, possibly for lack of emails, so I figured I'd go ahead and send it now, which is in fact the case. We got 0 emails for the topic on the episode of 261. That's okay, because we got a bunch this week. My college experience was colorful, to say the least. I started out with quite a few advantages. I'd taken the AP tests in high school for both English and German, earning good enough scores in both that I got credit for the first 2 English composition courses, as well as beginning an intermediate German, before I even started college. I still had classes in those subjects, as my plan was to teach both subjects eventually, and it was very odd often being in classes with juniors and seniors. Unfortunately, I didn't go to class very often. It was the first time I was out on my own with no one forcing me to do anything, so I didn't do anything. Well, I did hit on my roommate once, but that had mixed results. He didn't beat me up or anything, but he was uncomfortable enough that he made a complaint and ended up moving out. On the plus side, they never ended up finding me a new roommate, so I essentially had a single for the rest of my time at that school. It shouldn't come as too much of a shock that my time there wasn't too long. By the end of my first year, I had lost my financial aid and was quite close to being kicked out entirely. I made an admittedly short-sighted decision to move from my home state of Michigan to Miami, Florida, with my ex and his new boyfriend. This is the same ex I wrote to you about years back when you asked for relationship horror stories, the one who was a drama-fueled manipulator and is now in prison for distributing child pornography. Well, sounds like a winner. Needless to say, things in Florida did not go well. Between drama at home, financial issues, and my work schedule, I only got a few credits over the year and a half I was there. I then spent a year back home living with my mom and stepfather, going to the local community college where I could afford to go, and looking for work in a state and city where the economy went bad long before 2008. I wasn't making much progress, but I was at least having a nice long-distance relationship with a cute jaguar from Maine. We had met in person a couple times, and by the end of the year, I was moving in with him. Took a while to settle in, but I was eventually going to school out there and working for the local Radio Shack, which is a fairly bad place to work if you're not much of a salesman, but it was a job at least. The relationship with Jaguar didn't last, but it was because we both recognized that things had become platonic, so it was mutual and we remained friends. I did, however, meet my current mate there in Maine, a wonderful otter with whom I just celebrated our 5-year anniversary. In order to live with my new mate, I got a new place with another friend I had out there. Unfortunately, college had somehow turned him from the relatively mild stoner I knew into a pill-snorting, emotionally unstable drug dealer who, despite all that dirty money, was often behind on his share of the bills. Financial troubles led to trouble on my end, paying for college, and things just generally went downhill. And then the plane fell on my house. And I got leprosy, and my dick fell off. Because seriously, Jesus Christ. The saving grace, if it could be called that, was that my mother was getting to the point where she needed help around the house. She had been battling with cancer a couple years at that point, and had divorced my stepfather when his response to her diagnosis was depression and alcohol. I got a transfer for work and moved back home. Let's just see. I'm just gonna skip ahead. Like I wrote at the beginning, my experience was unconventional. This whole thing, after all, took place over almost 11 years, and I only have a bachelor's degree to show for it. Still, it taught me quite a bit, and I hope others can learn from my experience. I would say the lessons I learned were as follows. Go to class and do your fucking homework. Don't miss a day unless you absolutely have to, especially the first day. It's easy to lose momentum and to rationalize that one more wouldn't hurt. Always do an assignment, even if you're completely stumped. Handing something in lets you avoid at least avoid a zero, because a 70 is better than a zero. A 60 is better than a zero. Pretty much everything is better than a zero, but a zero. Speaking of homework, don't put it off until the last minute. Work on it as soon as possible. If you get done early, you've got the peace of mind of knowing you're done. If you need more time than you thought, you have it, as opposed to just being screwed. Despite what furry porn repeatedly tells us, keep things with your roommates professional or best friendly. The odds of you two hooking up are statistically insignificant, and there's bound to be drama either way. If you're not 100% sure of what you should do, start with your general education classes. I changed majors from German English education to computer networking to accounting, and precious little of the previous two counted for the accounting degree. Keep at it, even and especially if you do end up needing to take time off. And don't do drugs, kids. Seriously, college is often a place where there's more access to such things, and while college is seen as a place to experiment, try to avoid this one. Try a cock and or pussy, whichever model, if any, you lack experience with. Try to get tied up and or spanked for the first time, sure, but stay away from anything that involves snorting or needles. I realize this probably qualifies as a wall of text, and I apologize for that, especially if Shiva gets it. Haha, she's not here this week. Tried to be concise, but it was a long, if educational, experience. All caught up and looking forward to the show. Zilfair, the happily broken blue fox. Yes, keep up the good work with your weight loss, Savrin. Thank you. I'm down another 25 pounds since last time I rode in, beginning of July. So I just want to let people know that even if they don't elect to undergo surgery, things are possible. It's hard work, but it's not rocket science. Diet and exercise, when applied together and consistently, can work wonders over the long haul. I apologize if that sounds preachy, but I weigh less than I have since high school, and that has me so excited I just want to share that story too. So, pro tips, yes. Don't do anything that involves snorting or needles. And you should probably just abstain from weed, too, especially before class. and yeah, great job on the weight loss. I mean, obviously, the surgery gets you so far, but you still have to do the diet and exercise. And, yeah. You know, after a certain point, you still have to work your butt off to lose weight, and I'm kind of getting to that point. But, you know, not hard, and I still don't get hungry, and you know, I still have the benefits of the weight loss surgery, even if I'm not always losing a ton of weight. So, good job.
Okay, so how long have we been recording the second half here?
This is hour 29. You want to just like read this one more and just leave the rest for the next time?
Yeah, I'd kind of like to get to bed early tonight.
Yeah, because it is 9:21.
It's not super late, but I want to get to work early so that I
still have to pack for a trip out of town. I'm going to post early. This tonight.
Oh, okay. Jolly good. All right. Here's a Tumblr question. Hey, Nodcast, did you guys hear about Florida and the recent unbanning of same-sex marriage? We totally beat Texas to the punch. Now all gay sharks can get married. Rio.
Gay sharks.
I remember hearing about that when it happened, but that was like a week ago, and my memory just sort of took a dump on me. Do you know, Saverin, did they stay that, or
are they... They've stayed it, and the AG is being a dick about it. And the local Fed judge is like, nah, fuck you. It's going to go to the circuit court. And like just today, Indiana, Wisconsin, the Seventh Circuit was like, yeah, gay marriage bans are unconstitutional. And they did so unanimously.
Mm-hmm.
They apparently like tore into the states trying to say, no, no, queers are bad, man.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess for Wisconsin, it's maybe have an A and a hoser in there as well.
Now, since that's happened, there have been two losses.
There's
been
there was Tennessee, where a state judge said, nope, faggots can't get married.
And
but he's a state judge.
Just recently, today or yesterday, there was Louisiana.
A Fed judge in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
But that's Fifth Circuit, where a Fed judge in Texas has said, yeah, married bans are unconstitutional, as well as in Florida, and I believe so in Arkansas as well. So you have one judge versus three judges and the same thing, and the very things that have been chewed up and spit out by other judges and other circuits, this particular conservative old fuck agreed with, that tradition and morality and gay people can't have kids, so why do they need the benefits of marriage even though they may adopt?
Yeah, I just confirmed the judge in Florida stayed her own ruling in light of the inevitable appeal, which means that Florida is actually behind Texas because we've already had the ban overturned and put on appeal.
Mm-hmm.
So we're moving on to that next step.
So like the entirety of the Ninth Circuit, I believe the Ninth Circuit is still coming up, but like every state there has been told, except for like Idaho and Wyoming, have been told that, yeah, gay marriage bans are unconstitutional. Of course, you have states like California has it, and Washington State has it, and Nevada's going to get it soon enough. And so you basically – Utah got theirs underturned, and people actually got married for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're – because apparently their state AG was a fuck-up.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been gay married people in Utah, and there's – you know, they're in that weird legal limbo.
Yeah.
But basically you have like 30 wins in a row, but then you have a state judge in Tennessee.
38.
Oh, 38 wins in a row.
Yeah, we've won 38 out of 40 since DOMA decision. Yeah.
And so there's only really one way this is going to go.
And the one article I read, which is actually somewhat uplifting, actually pointed out that it's the Louisiana decision is kind of a good thing, because if all of these states decided independently that the ban was unconstitutional, there would never be a nationwide Supreme Court decision, because they could just be like, well, the states are making up their mind. We don't have to step in at all. And then if there were states where there wasn't a challenge, there just wouldn't be gay marriage there. But now, because two states, and particularly Louisiana one, because it was a federal judge, have disagreed with that. Now the Supreme Court will have to get involved again to affirm their prior decision. And, you know, we can only hope that they decide to actually make a more sweeping decision this time that would nationalize.
Instead of booting it back to the states.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, even if the states gets booted back to the states.
And there are some theories that the Supreme Court is doing it this way because the last time they did a sweeping national legalization of something, it was abortion and Roe v. Wade, and it led to 40 years of court battles and protests and contested laws and this, that, and the other thing. But maybe if it's rolled out kind of gradually, which is what's been happening.
Yeah,
you know,
there's like 19 states plus the District of Columbia.
Right, that maybe there wouldn't be quite the same amount of backlash.
I mean, Massachusetts has had it for a decade at this point.
Right.
And people in Massachusetts are like, what's the fucking deal? Who cares?
Yeah.
And like, you know, and it's the same fucking story in all these states. All them queers are going to come after your kids and your dogs. When that was what they were saying up in Massachusetts and other states. And they're just like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's probably the judges aren't allowed to be like, you see that shit over there? You're an idiot. Get out of my court. You know, they have to go through a little bit more than that. But
yeah.
You know.
So I'm hoping that Texas in the next 5 years or less, most likely, will have legal recognition of same-sex marriage. And then because I'm already legally married, mm-hmm. then my marriage would be recognized here in my home state. And that would be good. That would smooth out a lot of legal hurdles. Because mm-hmm. like I said, right now, if one of us dies, I don't know how the inheritance thing works.
Yeah.
You know, and all the shit like property taxes and stuff like that, that's all based on the county and the state, which yeah. doesn't recognize my marriage. So, you know, and, you know, if one of us was injured and ended up in a hospital, just because the federal government recognizes my marriage doesn't mean that the Baptist-run hospital here in Texas would have to.
I actually think that...
Now, Dallas County has certain...
Non-discrimination clauses. I'm pretty sure, though, that the federal government has basically said if your hospital gets any sort of federal funding, you can't discriminate against gays.
Okay.
But I don't know that for sure.
Right.
And yeah, there's always those horror stories that still happen to this day of asshole families.
And you know, I don't want to live in a world where that is a possibility at all.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, there are people out there that are like, oh, let's just leave it to the states. That stuff doesn't really happen. It does. It's like, it does. You can Google it. There's examples of this kind of shit happening.
It's like, even if it's incredibly rare, it still never needs to happen.
It's still a problem. You know, it's the same with any discriminated minority. You know, if it just happens once, that doesn't mean that it was right.
Yeah.
You know, that's still something you have to fix. So I have high hopes.
Yeah.
Based on how the last year has gone, like since the DOMA decision, we've won all these court cases and all these additional states have had legalized marriage.
Well, like the Seventh Circuit, like with their decision before it gets booted up to the Supreme Court, that mm-hmm. legalizes gay marriage in like Ohio. And I mean, there's states already have it. Like I think Wisconsin mm-hmm. and Wisconsin got it. Like Minnesota got it, I think.
Yeah, Minnesota
got it. And Illinois has it.
So I have friends in Minnesota that are
going like,
to get married.
That also covers, I think, Ohio, which was like 85% anti-gay when it came up on their thing. But then you've got things like fucking Iowa. It's just like, what? Queers get married here. We got corn. You know, who fucking cares?
Was that your gay married privilege hitting the table?
Yeah, that
there?
Was my privilege boner. Anyways.
Yeah. In short, I have high hopes. I'm very happy to be legally married now. And we'll see if in the next few years it's not recognized here in Texas. And I'll be very happy about that.
So come, you know, episode 310 or so. hopefully we'll be like, yeah, guess what? Gay marriage in Texas. Woo!
So on the horizon here, I've got in 2 weeks, I think it is. I've got Rainforest.
Oh, yeah.
So Tieran and I will be up there manning the For Planet table. I believe we will have Zia with us also.
Cool.
And we will have a handful of new things out. I don't even know what's all going to be ready yet, but
sweet.
It'll be a handful.
New product, yay.
Yay. So I won't be on that week.
Just a bit.
But yeah, that's what's coming up for me. You're going to a Brony thing
in Austin this weekend.
Cool.
So, but I have a thankfully, I have a lot of friends going to that as well. They're like from Houston and College Station, so there's no real excuse to not go.
Cool.
So it's like, yay, I can hang out with my peoples.
Yeah. Even if you don't, did I have any guests this year?
Peter New.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
And that's like their only like voice actor or whatever. They have a couple of community guests, but Peter New's a cool guy.
Okay. Cool. That's Big Mac, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's cool. Go have fun. And even if you don't do much at the con, you'll at least do what we did that one time and end up hanging out with friends. And
oh, yeah. I mean,
running out to dinner and stuff like that.
I will be sitting behind the table, possibly selling some tickets.
Oh, that's right. You're repping.
And your con. Then hanging out in the evenings and possibly inviting voice actors to room parties. Who knows?
So I want to go over a couple of housekeeping things real briefly. I don't know if we had mentioned this before, but we are not updating the website at foxstuffers.com anymore, or unless we go back and
can't.
Yeah, the original files are gone, so I have to go back and like maybe do
to reconstruct the whole fucking thing.
Yeah, maybe we'll do a WordPress or something like that. The episodes are still hosted at foxstuffers.com, but we just don't use that website anymore. And our email address is still going to be notcast@foxstuffers.com. I've set up notcast.com to redirect to our Tumblr, where we are actually going to be using that blog. Saverin's posting the episode info and the downloads there, links there.
And you even
there.
Have it set up so that whenever I post to Tumblr, I post to our Twitter.
Yep.
Which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, try to keep it as simple as possible and keep fans in the loop, whether they're following us on Tumblr or following us on Twitter. So you can go to notcast.com and you can follow us there if you have a Tumblr. You can follow us on Twitter at notcast. And that's mostly where we'll be getting information out. You know, we could also, when we post a topic, you know, we could post it to our Fur Affinity and we could also post it to the Tumblr.
Yeah.
Which will then populate over to the Twitter. Mm-hmm. So when we come up with topic episodes in the future, that'd be a good idea, just so that more people see it and can write.
Yeah, we also need to sit down and just go over, make a list of like 10 topics so that we have a bit of a log to go with.
Maybe we can do that sometime soon. But I just wanted to let folks know, we know that the news feed and everything on the old website is not updating. That's the way that's going to be for the time being. There's really no ETA on putting anything there since we have the Tumblr and we're a podcast. So it's like, how much do we really need a really fancy website or anything?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, so the thing is, the website was made with a program called Rapid Weaver, and the file format is called the Rapid Weaver Sandwich. Mm-hmm. When my computer bit the dust, I lost some data, including that file, which means I don't think there's really a way for me to pull down everything from that site back into Rapid Weaver and make it into an updatable format.
Hmm.
Unless there's some Mac wizard out there that knows that I don't.
Okay, well, write in to Saverin if
you... So if you're some sort of Mac wizard who's used Rapid Weaver before, give me a hand.
Yeah, so if you reinstall Rapid Weaver and get all the files off the website...
And could some, I mean, that would be nice, but I don't know how to do that. And I don't know if it's possible.
Hmm. Interesting. You would think there'd be a way to edit an existing website.
Yeah.
I mean, what if you just buy Rapid Weaver for the first time and you're like, I want to edit and update my existing site and put a polish on this turd? Are they saying you can't pull an existing website in and make updates to it?
I don't know. I mean, I have to look. I don't think I have it installed in my computer currently, but I need to get it back.
Okay. Well, that's something to think about.
Yep. So,
but anyway, right now, notcast.com points to the Tumblr. You can ask questions. You can email us.
Tumble.
You can read our episode posts there. So, and that also has the links for the MP3 and AAC RSS feeds if you need to subscribe. So
it's pretty professional for a Tumblr.
Oh, you know what we forgot to do?
What?
You had made a shout out or a request a couple weeks ago for people to go to iTunes and do ratings like you do on your other show.
Did we get some?
Well, I don't know. I have not checked. This is going to be kind of embarrassing if there isn't anything, actually. Should have thought of this.
Oh, well. We'll fix it in post.
Really?
As I say.
Hand wave. Okay, yeah. If nothing has happened, we'll fix it in post. Let's see. Podcasts. Let's clear out my search bar.
We'll fix it in post.
Really? No. I was typing in Notcast, and it wasn't showing up at first, so I kept hitting the button. So started to type KKK cast.
That's a completely different kind of show.
Yeah, it's
probably not on iTunes.
Yeah. I imagine iTunes would take that shit down.
Oh, speaking of podcasts, though, I did find a pretty funny one today.
Jesus Christ, iTunes. Really? Look what it does, Savern.
Oh,
it's not doing it now that I turned it around. It was all blanked out there.
Oh.
It
says we actually have a bunch of ratings at the top.
Have 161 ratings, which apparently you can't read on the iPad version.
Oh, that sucks.
What the fuck?
Still, it's like 4.5 stars, which is nice.
Looks like we have good ratings.
Cool.
I wish I could see them. I will have to look at it on my computer at home.
Yeah.
Since my fucking iPad doesn't want to cooperate. Oh, wait, there. They popped up at the bottom. Okay, so sort by most recent. The most recent is September 2013.
Oh. Oh, well.
But maybe we... I don't remember
We have more...
I don't know how...
More star ratings than we have reviews.
Yeah, we have 140 five-star ratings.
That's cool.
We only have 8 one-star ratings, which is not bad for, 260-odd episodes of a podcast that might be offensive to some listeners.
Yeah. So, that's cool. I mean, give us reviews. I mean... Obviously, you guys are writing in and listening. We still get a lot of stuff each week. We know you're out there listening, and we do appreciate it. And iTunes dick waving, it's not really that big a deal, honestly. I mean, we're really only marketing ourselves to the furry community. And if other people listen in, that's great. Mm-hmm. But we do this for fun, and we do this for y'all. But anyways, the podcast I was going to talk about real briefly is called Blame It on Space.
Oh, right. You mentioned this
It is a satirical podcast which basically mocks conspiracy theorists. The one I listened to was talking about HARP, the high altitude auroral something or other, and like they were talking about the deep underground military bases or DUMBs, and about these guys that were claiming that they were given gifts by God to be able to detect the powerful waves that HARP was creating to cause natural disasters and things like tornadoes in Oklahoma, which never happened before HARP became a thing.
Things like gayness across the land.
Yeah. Well, like one of the jokes there is like, why do you think aliens probe your anus? That's how they get the HARP to work. You got to sit and spin with the their anus scanning technology,
The inside of everyone's rectum is completely unique, just like your fingerprints
and
your retina.
Because eyeballs, man, give me 30 minutes, I can get you somebody's eyeball. But a rectum, you can't steal that. And that was like one of the lines, and I was like, this is actually pretty smart. It's funny. And like the guy, he'll intentionally mispronounce words sometimes, just to like be more authentic. I found it
so
rather...
they're pretending like they are
they're pretending they are, okay. But they're also mocking it at the same time,
right?
It's surprisingly clever. And it's a fairly high rated podcast. I was just looking for some new stuff since I dropped a couple and wanted to pick up a couple new ones. So
what's it called again?
Blame it on space. The icon is like an astronaut falling into the icon.
Nice.
So yeah, it's pretty cool. I liked the first episode. And the guys, it's got good audio quality. So that I'm a real audio snob when it comes to podcasts. If you've got line noise or whatever, I just won't fucking listen. Anyways, we're done with this. So good night.
And big balls.